Thank you for joining us today as I talk to our guest, Marydale Pecora, who is a longtime friend and colleague. And, you know, we didn't have a plan for today. And I think it was kind of an exploration of motherhood in many different forms: biological motherhood, motherhood by choice, what it means to be a mother and or a daughter or a son or a child, what it means to be a grandmother. You know, we're just kind of examining motherhood from all the different angles, even what it means to be the divine feminine, what it means to have deities of motherhood and qualities of mother. You know, at the very end, we acknowledge that this binary of male and female is something that we tend to do in society, to say that mothers are women. But really, at the higher spiritual realms, it doesn't matter if we are male or female or choose to be non-binary. It is the qualities of being a mother that all of us can embrace. And at the highest levels of spirituality, probably we can't even tell if people are female or male in that non-binary way, that, as Marydale said, we show up as pure light. And so as we go through this podcast on motherhood, I hope it's validating. I hope it supports you. And I hope that it will give you some nourishment on your spiritual journey today. All right, everybody, have a great day, and let's go meet Marydale. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We hope that you're enjoying this podcast each and every week. In addition to this podcast, Marlisa Sullivan and myself, Amy Wheeler, we are hosting a group inside the Polyvagal Institute. It's a free group where you can learn about yoga, yoga therapy, and polyvagal theory. We'd love to have you come on over there too to enjoy some of that free content. And I'll put the link in the show notes so that you can get over there easily. All right, let's go over and meet our guest for today. Welcome, Marydale, to the Yoga Therapy Hour. I cannot believe I have not had you on here yet. Such an honor.
Thank you. Thank you. And namaste to you, dear Amy. I just love you so much. And this is a privilege and an honor to be with you today on any day.
So, Marydale, before we get started, you had told me the other day about a very special thing that happened to you last week, and I want to share it with our listeners just so they can get some idea of your background, who you are, what kind of framework you look at the world from. So you have been named as an official Acharya.
True. Yes.
Tell us about that. What does that mean?
Well, it was unexpected to me. It's not something that I had anticipated in any way, shape, or form through the years. And my guru, Paramahansa Pragyananda from Kriya Yoga International, has appointed me as a Yogacharya in our lineage, which basically means that once everything is complete and I go through the proper teaching and channels, I will be able to actually initiate people into Kriya Yoga, which is extremely exciting and humbling for me. And it came from a lifetime of practicing yoga for well over 50 years and just being available to serve God and gurus.
And just for those people who might not know, is Kriya Yoga the one that's affiliated with the book Autobiography of a Yogi?
Well, it is, because one of our Param gurus is Paramahansa Yogananda. And in fact, he's seated here in this beautiful image that I have right over my shoulder. That is his image. And he's seated with several of the other masters in our lineage that include Babaji, the infinite saint that is believed to still be alive and well, walking the planet for well over 600 years, followed by Lahiri Mahasaya, and then Yogananda, followed by Sanyal Mahasai, and Sri Yukteswar, who was the guru of Yogananda, Satchinanda, And then Paramahansa Hariharananda, who left his physical form in 2022 and left the organization in the hands of Paramahansa Pragyananda, who is still alive and well. And yeah, and he's pretty young considering he's in his early 60s. And he's the spiritual head of the organization. He doesn't have anything to do with running it anymore. And Kriya Yoga International is a very large foundation with ashrams all over the world, including five here in the United States.
So the woman in me needs to ask, how many women are yogacharyas? Are you one of the few? Are you the first one? How many women get this kind of honor?
Surprisingly, we have quite a few. I would have to look at the website and count them, but I know that a third of the Yogacharyas are actually swamis or monastics that not only are in the order, but they have been given the privilege of actually teaching. Not all the swamis teach Kriya, they have many other different responsibilities around the planet. And then there are probably, I'd say 30 or so, 30 other lay individuals, householders like myself. And I would say within that group, probably one third are women. And in the monastics, I think one third are also women. So overall, about a third.
Okay, thank you. Because what I want to talk to you about today is this idea of spiritual motherhood and what that has meant to me to have a spiritual mother. And I'd love to hear your opinion on it. We have no plan, by the way, for this conversation. We have no questions. We have no direction. We are simply holding hands together as we walk for all of you listening. We don't know where it's going to go. So I'll just start with a little story, which might kind of frame our relationship and this topic. And that is that probably about 5 years ago, my earthly mother, my biological mother, passed away unexpectedly. And I was just really in a state of shock. That was not something that I thought would happen until she was in her 90s or later, and she was only mid 70s. And I was not prepared for the loss of her earthly body. Like, I just didn't know how that would leave me feeling like an orphan. And thankfully, I still have my father on earth. And I put a post out on Facebook to just say, wow, this is an interesting feeling, losing your mother. And I've never had a post go so viral. 500, 600 women commenting on how it feels to be motherless. So I know it's a topic that resonates with people. So I don't know if you have anything to say about motherhood, either biological motherhood or spiritual motherhood, but why are we yearning for that so much?
That's a beautiful question. I think it's also quite personal, but I do know from my own experience of having my own mother, of course, and then becoming a mother, being a mother-in-law, a stepmother, a grandmother, that I've had the opportunity to examine this role from many different perspectives. And spiritually, we know that the mother has us in her womb for 9 months. And having experienced that myself with my own children, I know that there is a bond that takes place between the soul that is germinating within and the human mother who's carrying that soul. And that's something that is unique onto itself and can't be duplicated in any other relationship, period. It can't. During the process of the 9 months or so that we're carrying the baby within, you become very familiar with rhythms. You become curious about one another. You feel a sense of anticipation, perhaps a little bit of anxiety of not knowing what's coming, who this being is that's within you. It's a very profound experience. And then, of course, once you go into delivery for a new mother, whether you've gone through it before or studied or whatever, I don't think you're fully prepared for the actual birthing process and how dynamic it is, and how instantaneously, once the infant enters into our domain, there is a bond that takes place. For better or worse, there is a bonding. And I know for me, with my second baby, I was questioning during my pregnancy how I could possibly love another child as much as I loved my first. And that vanished upon the birth. And there's just some kind of euphoria that takes place. And we know that when the baby is born, they are still attached to the umbilical cord. And that cord itself has been the literal lifeline that has sustained that life within the body of the mother. The mother is the one who cared for the baby all the time, not consciously, but I believe that on a very high vibrational level, everything the mother was experiencing was passed on to the embryo, the baby, and that there is memory of that. And speaking to masters throughout my limited lifetime, there are many, including Yogananda, who I didn't speak to in person, but he has a story about remembering being in the womb and how it felt for him to be trapped in a tight space and to anticipate being born and listening to all the conversations going on around him, and then actually being born and being so frustrated because no one could understand him and he couldn't walk. He was completely dependent and he found it to be extremely difficult and uncomfortable. But going back to those of us who are not that advanced, there still is this passage of high vibrational information and caring and love that takes place. And so, for a mother who wants the baby and is healthy and strong, that bond can be something that you are aware of in a very positive way. But make no mistakes, there are women who did not choose to be pregnant, had a struggle being pregnant, are unwell being pregnant, perhaps they're abused. There are many reasons why a mother can be in very high anxiety and even having things like drug addiction that can influence the baby within. So once the soul is born, that is it being onto itself. And yet there is no stronger bond than the connection between the host, which was the mother body, and that newborn creature. And so then, depending on all of the different aspects that take place, that little baby is either going to have a very strong start in the world through the maternal instincts of the mother, which is fascinating as we look not only at the human mother, but mothers within the animal world, how they immediately, instinctively, intuitively begin to care for their offspring. And it's kind of phenomenal what happens. So that idea of being ignorant, yes, perhaps we are, but we still know how to love, how to care, how to nurture on a very deep level. And that bond, they say, creates a silver umbilical cord, a cord of, again, high energy that lasts throughout our lifetime with our own mother. Again, better or worse, that umbilicus is there. And I certainly have felt that with my own children and do to this day. So it's an extremely important relationship in that the mother is the first teacher, and she is the one who is there for each of us more than any other human. If it is under, again, circumstances of a normal birth and relationship, I'm not talking about those that are a struggle and unique, although they're all unique. But the mother is the first teacher, and she continues to be that representation throughout our life. In Kriya, we are taught that the mother, as the first teacher, is the entity to always be bowed to first, and then the father, and then the guru, in that order, as the superiority of teacher. And so it's a very powerful relationship, and it's one where the mother has a lot of responsibility. And yet, it's important that the mother never forget that the child, the soul of that individual, was not born to them. This soul was born through them. So, knowing that, then you can't smother that soul, or as the modern term is today, be a helicopter mom. You need to be sensitive and wise enough to let your child find their way through this world by moving through things that are uncomfortable for them. We can't save them from that. And oftentimes, mothers think that they can, but they absolutely cannot. And the idea of giving your child roots and wings is a spectacular way of looking at rearing your offspring. It truly is.
I have two questions for you. First one, do you believe that we choose our parents, especially our mother, before we are conceived?
For me, I can only speak for myself. This is not a reflection on anybody else, and I respect and honor other people's beliefs. Through my own experiences and many, many, many experiences of being highly intuitive from the time I was a baby until now, and feeling extremely in touch with what others would say the other side is, I absolutely believe that we have a pod of souls that are migrating, expanding, and learning together, and that we determine prior to coming here what our relationship is going to be. And that is powerful, not only choosing, but it is one that allows for tremendous expansion. In a word, I believe that this place we have come to is a place that is helping us to learn, teaching us how to be better creators in the same exact vibrational wisdom of that which created us, because we're the offspring of that. So it's only natural that we would want to continue to expand and become better and better at creating. And one of those ways is through influential relationships on this planet, which this planet is extremely unusual because we are in a physical form and the soul is inside of us experiencing this. And on many other realms, that's not the case. We're pure energy. So this is a place where we can actually connect body to body. It's a very unique, different kind of place. So the answer after all that is yes, I do believe we are predetermined as to who we're going to birth through, and that process and the path it leads us to is specific onto our own needs and how we're going to influence others.
Hello, are you interested in polyvagal theory? Well, if so, I have two really cool things you might be interested in. One is an app called the Mighty Network, where Marlisa Sullivan and myself are hosting a yoga therapy and polyvagal theory group, and it's free. You can just join the group, come in and share thoughts and ideas on polyvagal theory, yoga, and yoga therapy. We try to post every week, stimulating a community around yoga, the nervous system, and polyvagal theory. So we'd love to have you join us. In addition, we are giving a 7-week class on polyvagal theory and yoga starting in the fall. You can find that on www.polyvagalinstitute.org, O-R-G. So we'd love to invite you to that 7-week course that's starting in September of 2024.
Okay, so that brings us to question number two, which is, I had a friend who is in another lineage or tradition, and she was trying to decide if she wanted to have biological children. And she went to her guru to get some wisdom to see what that guru thought about this question. And her guru said, Do you want to be the mother of two, three, or do you want to be the mother of many, many, many souls, meaning like a spiritual mother versus a biological mother? And she thought about it. Did she want to put her energy primarily into, you know, feeding and clothing and bathing and, you know, all the things that biological motherhood or adopted motherhood requires? Or did she want to spread it out among tens of thousands of people? And she wanted to have biological children and did do that. Do you think that's a choice? Like, I have not had biological children, but I have taught 20,000 college students and lots of yoga to people. Do you think our souls also choose that if they decide not to procreate?
I do. And I also think that those two things that the guru spoke of are not exclusive.
Right.
Because you can still have biological children and have many other children or individuals that you mother. And that's been the case certainly in my life. I was born a mother, am a mother, and I just always will be a mother because I come from that mentality. And so it's a beautiful thing when a woman understands that she doesn't have to have biological children and still can be very maternal and loving and share all of those attributes with others. It's important.
And I feel like there's a whole generation of women coming up, especially the Gen Z generation, that they're just simply saying, I really don't want to have children in this life. And that should be an option. And I'm okay with that. You know, it seems interesting that we're having, I don't know, maybe it's even older than Gen Z. So we're talking like 20-year-olds to about 45. It seems like that's a conscious choice for a lot of women based on the state of the world, their finances, their ability or inability to find a suitable partner, their concerns about, can I actually provide for this child the way that I'd like to? And they've just said, you know what? I'm choosing not to in this life.
That's very important. I believe, too, when you have so much clarity in your choices that you've arrived here with that. And that on some deep level, there's an understanding that that's not the path for you. But let's not make this such a small decision for many other women who long to have children and cannot have children, because then they are faced with feeling a sense of longing for something that they cannot do. And yet, there are options within that, as you said, for adopting or for fostering. Or I just heard the other day, they were talking about how few women today feel sad about having a dog instead of having a child. They really like having dogs.
I can relate.
Yeah, I can too, as my puppy sleeps right here by me. Yes. So again, everything in the universe has purpose. And when we are intuitive and calm enough and stay in integrity and follow the truth and the voice within, then we don't stumble as much as we would. And certainly becoming a parent is a big choice. And yet, you know, there are young women who get pregnant accidentally who aren't even married. And who to say that that isn't a direct life path also? And who knows why that child needed to enter through her for maybe physical characteristics, hereditary genes, whatever it was, or to force her to grow up or to make her parents become more responsible. We don't know. Or maybe break all of them. We don't know. I had a very poignant experience with a couple that were dear friends of mine. Highly spiritual young couple who were pregnant with their first child, a daughter, and the mother became quite ill. And I always forget what it's called when you have the blood that kind of backs up in the system, preeclampsia, I think it's called. And she became very ill, was rushed to the hospital. They had to induce labor to deliver the baby, who was also born with the same problem. And she was full term. She was due like in 3 days. But they were so polluted with this problem that the baby only survived 12 hours. And it was very devastating because otherwise the baby was perfect. And so we spent hours talking about why Emma came to the world as she did. And we all determined that her role here was to expedite within all the people that were participating in her pregnancy and her birthing process to experience what it is to love so deeply, so greatly, and have so much anticipation, and then to have that taken away from you. What does it do to you? How does it leave you? And the most interesting thing in this particular relationship is that both of these young parents were estranged from their families because their family hadn't approved of their marriage. And Emma's death brought those families together in a way that was phenomenal. And they've gone on to have another beautiful little boy, Bodhi. He's just great. And everybody is engaged and thrilled and happy. And this has been going on 9 years now. So who are we to know why somebody comes for such a brief period of time on the earth? But whatever it was, I am of the belief and I trust that she completed her purpose here, which was extremely dynamic in such a short amount of time.
Ooh,
That's a hard one.
Very hard one.
I also know so many of us, myself included, but also many of my friends who wanted children at one time. And for whatever reason, it didn't happen because, as we know, in vitro fertilization can cost anywhere from $20,000 to $200,000, and not everyone can engage in that, or it just doesn't work for some people. And yet, after grieving that realization that it wasn't going to happen, like life 20 years later is so good and so rich and so full. And the longing, at least for me and some of the people that I have talked to about this, it actually did dissipate. It was something we thought we would always grieve. And now it's like no big deal. So I also want to say to those people out there that have that deep, deep longing that doesn't mean you will always 100% have that longing. You might, but you also may find acceptance around it and choose to focus on all the other joyful areas of your life that are very rich and meaningful.
Oh, I agree. I believe that yoga gives us the tools to do that. And it is a practice that is all inclusive for all parts of who we are and helps us to understand that we are whole and complete in our own person, and that the idea that anyone outside of us can make us happy or complete us is false. And certainly that longing for having a child falls into that category. The, oh, if only I could have a child, my life would be complete. And how many couples get into trouble when they have a tumultuous relationship, marriage, and they decide we're going to have a child because it's going to make our marriage stronger. And the marriage may be stronger in the moment, but then falters and ultimately falls apart. So, a child is not a fixer. That's not what it is, unless it is, because it sure could be. We don't know. We
It could go either way, right?
it
Add
could.
more stress or more connection.
Yes. And I know that my oldest daughter, who is now 47, has peers, beautiful women who chose their careers first and had put having children on the back burner until they were ready or their career was at a place where they felt complete. And now that they're at this point, they struggle trying to get pregnant and discovered that they can no longer get pregnant. And it's a heartbreak and difficult and complicated. And between the couple, there are issues that come up. And yet, I've seen time and time again with these older women who want and then can't, a sense of relief as they go forward and put it behind them. because they also have witnessed so many of their peers who had children and kept the career and struggled and, you know, tried to do it all and were just exhausted by all of this. And I know that my daughter will always say that any woman who doesn't have children, who is a career person and pulling it all together, they have no idea how complicated it is, because it really, it truly is all encompassing. And as a parent, either you're a parent or you're not a parent. It requires you to be fully in, just like being pregnant. You can't be a little bit pregnant. It's a very interesting world, and we don't know why. Ultimately, we can guess and we can talk about it and theorize it and make excuses and pretend that it doesn't bother us or whatever. But this is a very delicate and deep subject for women and for men. And for men, I feel today we're in a position that we're just going backwards in time. Women are being usurped of their power to feel strong enough in their determination to do what's right for their body and their lifestyle, whether they want to have children or not. And I think that that is something we strove for throughout the decades, and we finally won, and now it's kind of reversing. And to me, it's a sad thing. I really feel that.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. It's a delicate issue that people have really strong feelings about. And we have to acknowledge that there are women's rights being taken away as we speak in June of 2024.
And I do not want to demean anyone's religious ideas, and I want to celebrate them and say, yes, if that's what you believe, I believe in yoga. I'm 100% in. If you believe this, then by all means, follow it with all your heart. Yogananda said there's one destination, endless paths to get there. If this is what you believe and you trust to be right for you, the key is it's right for you. It's not right for everybody. And that is the line of demarcation that as women, supporting women, we need to be very gentle and generous to that idea that it's up to you. You're the one.
And, you know, Meridiel, this theme has been rolling around in my head for the last 30 minutes, which is mom guilt, not having the resources, the time, the energy, the financial stability, the perfect partner, the ability to raise happy, healthy children in the way that we dreamed we could raise them. And then all of a sudden, like, everything falls apart. You and I were talking about this the other day. So what do we do with that mother guilt?
That in itself is a very special field of understanding for us. And I think one that deserves our deep and sensitive attention. Because today, and I've seen it with my own children, and we have five children, four are married, all four of the families have children, and I've watched all of them strive to do it all. And they are just, you know, four couples in a world today where we are in a situation that is encouraging people to be much more than we were designed to be. And believe me, I'm a modern woman. I'm a very modern person, and I think in a modern way. But I also look back and reflect upon a time where the woman had an opportunity, once she had her children, to be home and to raise the children. And somehow that started to take on a hue of not being enough, that the women, you know, should be free to go out and do the same job a man does. Well, I'm sorry to tell everyone, but we're not men. We're the women, and we have the babies. And the babies, as we talked about, the mother is the first teacher. And so being able to be there with the child is a very big privilege that has been taken away from women. They just can't do it because what did they get, 3 months off? And then they've got to go back to work, and then they have to find childcare. often strangers, because the way our society is designed, we don't have grandparents living with us most of the time, because many of the grandparents are still working also, because they're trying to make sure that they have something to support themselves. I mean, it's a very, very, very difficult world. And the children suffer. They suffer from it. And I don't have an answer. I know we can't go backwards. And I would never say that women shouldn't work. I've worked my whole life. And keeping all the balls in the air is just not easy. It's not easy being human at any time.
Yeah.
It just isn't, Amy. And there are complications for all of our lives, many of them unforeseen, and most of them unseen by outsiders.
And I know women who have decided to work part-time, and they tell me that because of the interaction and the intellectual discussions they have at work and the stimulation of being with other adults, they feel they come back to being a mom as a better human, like not as frustrated, not as overwhelmed, not as exhausted, because they've had a little bit of adult interaction. So again, I think it goes back to each person trying to figure out the best path forward for them.
Absolutely agreed. Because again, a society has changed so much that being a stay-at-home mom is not really looked upon with, you know, that much respect and honor. And so at the same time, I know many young mothers who have been able to stay home and homeschool their children and are there 24/7. And are their children better off? It's yet to be seen. I don't know. I think it goes back to our path and every soul coming in here to get what they need in order to develop into who they're supposed to be. So it's interesting, but I believe no matter what path we take, it needs to be one that makes our hearts sing as much as possible. And certainly mothers who are overwhelmed need support, whether it's from their spouse or their mother or grandparents or neighbors. They need support. They need time to go away from the children. They need time to just pause. They need to be able to go for a hike, go for a walk, go have a coffee somewhere. They must have that support. And many of them don't have anybody to reach out to. And it becomes a beginning of a very depressing situation. And then it goes into the children also, because the children are sensitive. You can't hide it from them. So
I don't know. I don't think we were supposed to be able to do it all alone. We, in the past, have lived in communities where with other couples, other family members that can lend a hand and give us a break, and you take my kids and I'll take yours. And, you know, to think that we could do it all by ourselves is pretty unreasonable.
Well, it is. It's very unreasonable. Plus, today, add into it the cost of raising your children, or we're in Los Angeles, of course, which is one of the most expensive places to live, period. But in order to live here, you've got to make plenty of money. And in order to make plenty of money, you've got to work. And so by the time you take care of all of your chores at home and the children and all of their sports and activities that they do all the time and have a relationship with your husband, and then, you know, get up at the crack of dawn and go to bed late at night, and you're just worn out. And this, it's a rat race and a very unfortunate situation. So going back to what you said earlier, yes, women need support and they need to have a break. And often a part-time job is a godsend for them. But again, many of them can't squeeze that in. They've got to have a full-time job to make the money to be able to pay for the childcare.
That's right.
To be able to leave the house. So
so many friends that say, if I go to work, I'm just going to pay that in childcare. And then someone else is raising my child. I mean, right. That's a really tough place to be.
It's tough. And let's also not forget that our society thinks women should look good all the time. They should be fit and well-groomed and, you know, wear nice clothes and do all that. When a woman feels so haggard after not being able to get everything done in 24 hours, that's another very, very difficult part of this equation. It's exhausting. And maybe one more caveat, COVID changed things for mothering in a very big way because it left them with the burden of having to do all and be all for their children trapped inside their house, where the kids, had to be homeschooled, many of them, not all, but the majority here in Los Angeles were. Then the mother becomes the teacher and teaching things that she doesn't even know how to teach and trying to inspire her kids and help them to stay away from anxiety and depression and keeping them busy and trying not to have fear and instill the fear of a pandemic into them. And it was really a terrible time. And then for the kids to go back to school and be behind because they were not socially exposed to one another and interacting with each other. It's really been a very devastating blow to this generation coming up. And I think it's going to be interesting to see who they are as adults because this was very different for them, for this generation, very, very different. And it's tough.
I think if we've done anything in our time together so far, it's just validate that it's really damn hard. We're not coming up with solutions. We're just saying, wow, it's rough out there.
It is rough. And that's why, for me, I have always turned to my spiritual practice because that's what gives me the roots and wings for this person to be stable and to live a very happy, content life. And it's been through study of scripture and by practical application and doing my practice. And it's daily, daily, daily. I refuse to let the world dictate how I'm going to live or how I'm going to think or how I'm going to feel. Yeah, it saved me time and time again.
And some people might think, oh my gosh, I'm so exhausted. How could I possibly get a spiritual practice in? But there's a lot of really practical ways to do it. You sent me a podcast the other day that's on SoundCloud that I can listen to in the car. I can go for a walk. I can listen to it while I'm lifting weights in the morning or as I'm lying in bed at night. I mean, there's many ways to be nourished spiritually. And your children could even benefit from listening in the car too.
Well, absolutely, that is true. But on a much more elemental level for me, Amy, I discovered that my spiritual practice is what nourishes my life. And without it, I'm nowhere near as good as I am with it. And so starting my day with my first thoughts of God, and determining that no matter what, on this day, I'm going to be happy before I even get out of bed. And I determined that I'm going to pray first. And then once I'm up and about and have my cup of tea and stretch, I go straight and do my meditation. And I have to be up before everybody else in order to do that. It's discipline to do that. But I feel so much better after that. And, I did it when my kids were small. I've done it when I'm not well. I've done it when I'm vacationing. And it's just like flossing your teeth. You don't miss flossing your teeth because you've learned, we've learned here in America, thank God, through our wonderful dentistry that we have access to, that keeping your teeth flossed is the beginning of healthy teeth and gums. And when your teeth are healthy, they're going to last you your whole life. And if they're not, and you get an infection in your mouth, it can actually kill you. So flossing is not easy and it's tedious. You have to do it, but it sure pays off in the long run. It's an investment in your physical mouth. Well, if you want to spend that much time and effort on your mouth, why wouldn't you spend time and effort on your relationship to God, to source, to whatever you want to call that which created all of us? Because we have 24 hours in a day. And if we can't take 1 hour every single solitary day to tap into that incredible energy and presence, then we're shooting ourselves in the foot. Yes, we're tired. Yes, life is busy. Yes, it's all those things. I mean, we can liken it to taking a smoothie every day full of vitamins, and it gets you through your whole day physically. That's what your practice does. And what you said is absolutely essential. Feed yourself with words that uplift your spirit all the time. And it doesn't matter what your faith is, it has nothing to do with that. Just because I'm a yogi doesn't mean I don't celebrate you being a Muslim or being a Christian. In fact, I applaud you and celebrate and know that we're sisters on the same path. That's putting first things first, as Wayne Dyer always said. Put first things first. And that's putting our practice first.
I think that leads me to why it is amazing to have a spiritual mother to remind us. I mean, I talk to you every couple of weeks, and it just reminds me, like, okay, Amy, get back on track. Make sure you're doing your practice. Here are some podcasts you can listen to. Okay, your mental state has faltered here. Let's get back on track. I think having a mentor or a spiritual teacher or whatever you want to find is really a key component of keeping ourselves spiritually fit.
I completely agree. And I know that in yoga, the Divine Mother is revered. And there are so many forms of the Divine Mother. And many of them come equipped with many arms and hands. And it's believed that they have all those arms and hands in order to embrace us on our journey forward. And many of these forms of the Divine Mother, whether it is Mother Mary or whether it's Durga, it doesn't matter who, Kuan Yin, all of these different forms have that serenity about them and that safety and that enduring openness to embrace and to take us into them where we have safety. And that's very similar to going back into the womb, where we started this conversation, where the physical mother has this innate, loving, strong, energetic relationship with us. And even though the Divine Mother may not be physical for us, still knowing her presence, that entity, that incredible energy is there for us, I think is also a good place to put a lot of our stress and tension, our anxiety, our sense of confusion, if you will, depression, whatever it might be, to just literally take it and put it on their lap, just give it to them. And for women, you asked me about the number of women that are yogacharyas. One of the reasons why people fall away from coming to our lineage is they look at it and they see all these men as the masters and they ask, where are the women? And Hari Harananda addressed that very simply by saying that every single one of these men is where they are today because of their mother. And it was their mother who gave them the roots and wings, in so many words. They're the one that nourished them and gave them permission and pushed them and said, yes, this is who you are. Yes, go and do this. Yes. And every single one in our lineage just adore their mother. And they are so supportive of all the women that go through Kriya. There's not a feeling of being lesser than. And yet, from our perspective, we just see them as, again, a group of guys. And we don't see beyond that because we don't really look beyond that. So it's kind of being a little bit ignorant. But at the same time, I understand it because I would very much like to have a woman up there in that picture back at me. Funny thing is, at the studio at Param Yoga, I had a beautiful image of Yogananda on the main altar. I can't tell you how many people thought he was a woman. They just always thought he was a woman because he was very beautiful. His hair is long and he didn't have a beard ever. And he was very full of the Divine Mother. He revered her and constantly prayed and sang to the Divine Mother. So he carried all that Shakti in him also.
And I think on an earthly realm, at least for me, I feel safer with woman as my mentor. There's been some abuse, obviously, in the yoga communities. And I just think in general, it's easier to open up to a woman and to feel safe and held and that there's no strange ulterior motives. So I think it's really important that we do see women in these lineages and traditions, and not just women that are upholding what the men want, also, like women that are showing up as real and authentic and willing to disrupt when needed, you know?
Right. And that's one of the reasons why I was so surprised of the appointment of being a Yogacharya in our lineage, because I've never even been to India, a modern woman from Hollywood and have a lot of attributes of independence. And I've taught a number of things in my life, and I'm no wimp. So I find it very interesting that there is not only this support, but this encouragement to be who I am. And as the guru has said, just be an instrument for God. That's all you are. Just continue to be an instrument. And so I've been given permission to be me, and that's very empowering. I don't have to pretend to be something I'm not, because I couldn't do that.
And it's so important to have people who are householders and have grandkids and kids and are out there living the real difficulties of life to be our mentors and to be our teachers.
Absolutely. I think that it's very off-putting when you have a teacher who has lived a life of being a monastic, and then they start talking about how you should feel about parenting. I think it's wrong. I remember going back, and since I'm sure this podcast probably has mostly women, for you men who are on, just be with me for a moment. I remember clearly going to my first gynecology appointment and finding that it was a man that was going to examine me. It was very off-putting for me, very, very off-putting. And then when I became older, because I was then so used to all my OBGYN appointments being with a man, then when I had a woman who delivered my son, there were seven women in the delivery room with us, and I just rejoiced, and I had a little boy. And ever since then, he has taken forward in his life this idea that he gets along better with women than men. And I think it's great. So, we do learn to be flexible and accepting, but I agree with you. There is a real sense of comfort to share with other women, because women are women. We really are. And we need that understanding, someone who's kind of carried the torch, if you will.
One last thing before we go. I want to acknowledge there are people who don't feel like they fit in either category, male or female, that I think some of the most spiritual people I have met have been more non-binary. They have embodied both the masculine and the feminine simultaneously, almost like you can't really tell which they are, and it essentially doesn't even matter.
Oh, absolutely correct. It doesn't. And I believe, going back to where we began, that we choose this life and it's given to us for whatever purpose, to help expand our ability to create. And what a beautiful thing when we consider what yoga teaches, and that is that as a soul, you are neither man or woman. Period. You just aren't. We're just souls. We are pure love and pure light. And so it's very fitting.
Well, I think that is a great note to finish with. I just want to thank you for taking the time today to talk about all of this. I think, at least in my experience, there's not enough time carved out to talk about motherhood, what it means to be a mother or not be a mother, how hard it is, all the choices we have to make, all the mother guilt. I think just having this conversation will just be very validating to a lot of people. So thank you.
Well, it is my pleasure, and hopefully it will open the door for many, many more discussions to come because it's a deep, broad subject and does need a strong voice. So thank you, Amy, for allowing me to share this time with you.
Thank you, Marydale.
I just love you as a daughter of choice.
I love you as a mother of choice.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Marydale, for being with us today. You know, there are some conversations that I almost go into the void and I think, what did we just talk about? What just happened? And I just have to trust that whatever message has come through us today has provided some goodness or benevolence in the world, that somehow the universe has a plan to deliver this message to the people who need to hear it. And those that do not need to hear it don't have to listen. So I hope this has been nourishing to you. It's been a lovely conversation for me, and I'm sure for Marydale. And I will see you next week. Have a lovely week, and thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. You can also see the video versions on YouTube. If you'd like to get early release, you can always support us as a Patreon member. If you'd like to find us on YouTube or Patreon, just type in the Yoga Therapy Hour and Optimal State and you'll find us. All right. Thank you for your support. We appreciate you so much. A special thank you to our team here at Optimal State. We are truly a global family. George Mantuan, one of our executive producers. Adam Satchel, senior media producer and sound engineer from the Philippines. Krishna Panchal, a producer from Canada. Modupe Abdullahi, who does the show notes and is an editor for us from Nigeria. And Peter Morley, who wrote and produced the music for this show, who lives in Australia. Find more about Peter's work at www.zenmusic.biz. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.